Very, very good. The answer is key bidding has numbers, like zero is no cut at all, one, two, three, the cut depth. A bump key is made by cutting all the bidding down to the deepest depths or the nine. So it's 999 key. Bump keys work. Did you get your drink? All right. Bump keys work very, very similar to the way pick guns work. So let's cover pick guns very briefly, and you'll see why bump keys are very, very similar. Basic physics, guys. If we have a billiard balls on the table, what's going to happen if I shoot this cue? Yes. Three's not really going to go anywhere. Two's going to go flying. Newtonian physics at its finest. Pick guns work the same way. Pick guns, just a long blade down the barrel. It's tension with a spring and, you know, a trigger that flicks this. Pick guns work by smashing on the bottom pins. Hopefully, if you get it all lined up just right, you need a little practice, but you can smash them all at the same time. And if you're lucky, all the top pins will jump up, and you can turn the lock very quickly before they have a chance to spring back down. But pick guns, besides being expensive, bulky, pain in the ass to carry around, a very hard thing to explain what the hell they are if you get asked. There's a cheaper, easier, smaller, and very simple solution that can replicate this same physics. Thank you for this, by the way.
It's a retribution for a previous beer bought.
All right. Laz and I first actually met, was it here at, was it 10 or 11?
Oh, I was drunk.
Laz was up on stage and he was mentioning, you know, he was picking away and he wanted beer and I brought one up and I think I said something about, yeah, I saw you at Hope and I learned to pick. He's like, come up here and show me, man. I'm trying to embarrass my ass and I finally picked one for you though. And we've been friends.
By the way, you're a dick.
Why am I?
I was sitting over in speaker registration and I saw a video of like me and Barry on stage. Mm-hmm. You're like, by the way, that's Barry. You didn't fucking mention me.
Well, I'm sorry. It says your name in the link, Barry and Laz.
Yeah, thanks.
All right, so simulating a pick gun with a bump key works as follows. Take a key that was designed for your lock. Notice I didn't say cut for your lock. It doesn't have to be the right bidding. It just has to be the right keyway that fits, down into your lock. Take that and cut all the bidding notches to the deepest level. That's where you get 999. So now I'm going to be burping from this friggin' beer. You can do this, you know, with a key machine. You know, go to your local hardware store and be like, oh, can you cut it to 999? The kid who's making 550 isn't going to ask you why. Or, you know, you can do this with a Dremel. You can do this with a lot of different tools. I've hand cut them before and they will work. Take this key and insert it into your lock, not all the way. You'll actually feel, as these ridges, you know, are going past the pins, you'll feel it click, click, click as it goes in. Make sure it's one pin stack out. What's that? Yeah, put it, mouse mentioned, put it all the way in and just click it out by one. Next thing you want to do is put a little bit of torque on this key and just smash the hell out of it. You come at it with a force. It bangs across all those ridges, and you can see they connect. Hopefully, you'll hit all of them at the same time, and all those top pins will jump up. Yeah, you'll smash your hand a lot. It's just how that goes.
One thing you often will get a better luck with when you make a bump key, if you cut the shoulder back just a hair farther than it should, this makes life a little bit easier. Just it gives a little bit more wiggle room when you're bumping it and knocks them a little bit harder. Not much of a difference, but it does help.
This is a, you know, kind of what we'll call one grade up from master. This is a fortress lock, and this is a key that originally went to, let me see if I have this one right, originally went to a different fortress lock, but I've cut it way down. Now, if I put this in, this will not open this lock. But if I pull it out by one, I'm going to try to do this so everyone can work with the camera here. The trick is a little and a lot. A little bit of torque and a lot of bit of bang. You actually want the sensation of the key slipping out of your fingertips as it's being knocked by the lock. There you go.
You shouldn't have tried the second time, should you?
Yeah, shouldn't have.
I was impressed the first time. That's pretty good.
I'm pulling it too hard because I don't want to smash my thumbs.
Pussy.
Here, you do it then.
Shit, I don't do that. That's what I have bolt cutters for.
So that's bump keying. But there is a... I'm sorry, question. You're a brighter man than I. The question is, why can't, you know, you just put... Yeah, put a torque tool in there or on the key. Yeah, you probably could do that. I'm not thinking clearly, apparently.
It's not as cool.
My thumb thanks you for that. This is sort of the dirty bump method, if you will. It's not that sophisticated. There is an even better bump method that the guys in Tool in the Netherlands came up with.
Kevin, there's got a question for you.
Oh, I'm sorry, there's a question. Where was it?
Left side.
Not exactly. Raking, I didn't even cover raking that much. We'll talk about it in the hands-on. Raking is just beating up the pins independently, trying to just catch a bunch of shear lines at once on a crappier lock. Bump keying actually is intended to hit all the pins simultaneously. Oh, master wave? Yeah, that can happen. The question was, we'll talk about master pinning in a little bit. Master pinning sometimes involves very small pins inserted, or actually wafer-shaped pins inserted into the stack. With a big gap introduced like that, can those flip and bind up? Yes, that conceivably can happen. It's not the most common thing because the gap is only there for a second, but I imagine it could happen.
Little addendum to that. If that is happening, it's because the locksmith didn't follow manufacturer's tolerances or the lock is wearing out because they have specific minimum wafer sizes, so that doesn't happen. Because that used to happen a tremendous amount with people using too small of a wafer.
There you go. Thank you.
Shit, I got beer, man. I'm running out.
All right. Now, with respect to the I said that was like the dirty bump technique, there is a really nice bump technique that's been published by the guys in Tool. It's called the minimal movement bump. They actually have a white paper about it. This involves taking an existing bump key and at two different points heavily modifying this bump key even further. You can shave off probably about a quarter to a half of a millimeter from the shoulder and a half of a millimeter or more from the tip. Now, this is a very, very unique modified key. If you have it in the lock, you can even squeeze it a little deeper now because you've shaved the key down. And you notice that as you squeeze it in, the spring pressures from the driver pins up top will actually kind of kick it back out a millimeter or so. This enables you to deliver a lot of force right where you want it very precisely without smashing across whole rows of pins. You come at this, they have a tool they call a tomahawk. I've seen them do this, whack right at it, comes right into beautiful force, delivered real clean, and I've seen them bump really sophisticated, like Barry mentioned. Remember the geographical weakness on that V10? He can make a bump key out of a V10 because the top part of the bidding will bump, the bottom part of the bidding on the sidebar just does its job normally. He bumps his V10 that way. He's bumped multi-locks that way, I've heard. I can't imagine how, but I guess the force just gets delivered because we talked about how the interactive pins work. So, yeah, that's a very, very powerful attack. It can, by the way, be bad for the lock. So if you have a family heirloom or something, and you're like, I'm going to play with bump keying, don't do it if you care about the lock, because I've destroyed locks doing this. Especially if you do the dirty method, it'll misshape the pins. It'll really beat things up. I've had locks that just don't even work anymore because I've bumped them to death. Yes. We can cover that a little. The question was, doesn't this leave clear indications that this has happened? There's forensic evidence. We can talk about that in a bit. I got to keep moving through, though. We got a lot of good stuff. Yes, question. What keeps the key pins? Well, they can't fall down anymore because they're in the keyway as far down as they go. And they're not going to jump up because we're transferring physical force through them. So they're just going to sit right where they are. They're not going to go up. They're not going to go down. They have nowhere to go.
There's spring tension behind them, so they're not staying suspended. You have a half of a split second where they're up there, and you're just catching that right moment. They're not staying up there permanently. You're just hitting it, and they stay there for a split second, like throwing a ball in the air. And while it's upright, just at the right height is when you grab it. And
all right,
I know you got to get going, but let me cut you off for half a second. A general disclaimer, I don't know if you did this, I'm sorry, I was registering. You mentioned you can break locks. Don't practice on your front door for a number of reasons. One, because you may break the lock, but more importantly, because your neighbors will call the cops because they don't know who you are. If you're going to practice on any door, try a back door or whatnot, but still you're going to get your ass locked out of your house. So just go buy a $10 lock from Home Depot to practice. Mm-hmm.
Very, very good point. So, yes, this can be bad for the lock. I've destroyed locks doing this. Some of my locks, I've had to try to lubricate them to open them now because they're just broken. And about lubrication, the question for a Red Bull, when, if ever, do you use WD-40 in a lock, and why or why not? Whoa, that was a lot of – I think it was gray, grayish-blue shirt here. Half right answer. Get you a lighter. Come on up for a lighter. All right,
throw
I saw
it
you come.
Throw it.
Wake up. Oh, well, it's solidified. You're kind of on the right track, but I'm looking for a solid answer on when, if ever, you can use WD. I got a guy down here with the glasses. Well, his answer was never, and I'm saying that's not a completely accurate answer.
Never, because
well, you're all right around. You basically, a lot of people are hitting this point. The main point I wanted to make, hang on here, my guy's in the front. Just throw some lighters at these people who had their hands up. Because everyone kind of has it. Keep your hands up. I know who you are. That, hey, extra hands just went up. The point I wanted to make is WD-40 is not good. You can get them, then these guys. All right.
Start whipping with people's heads, dude.
WD-40, we got a guy with. Yes, WD-40 doesn't, did you get one? Oh, is that a question or a? Very, very good. He's got the full. You get the Red Bull.
I knew that.
Yes. All right. Here. We got to keep moving. Here's the. Oh man, we're really dying on time. The deal is. Well, that's cool. But we got a lot to cover. I added a lot of shit. WD-40. Anybody who's in the service, especially the Navy, maybe you can tell me what does WD-40 stand for. Water displacement is exactly right. Water displacer 40 was a formula designed to seep into, you know, maritime situations, to seep into all the cracks, to dry out in there, to actually make this little waxy buildup to keep water out of machinery so it didn't rust and corrode when it was in there. It was not meant as a lubricant. It's kind of the antithesis of a lubricant. Yes, it's greasy when it goes in, but it doesn't stay that way. There's essentially three kinds of lubricants out there. There's wet lubricant, dry lubricant, and drying lubricant. And everyone who's tuned in on the AP TV system just right now, they're saying, what the hell talk is this? Looking at the... Did they move the schedule around? Different situations call for different products. If you have any precision mechanism, like, for instance, locks, you want to use exclusively a wet or oil-based lubricant, something that is going to go in wet and stay wet. I use gun oil on most of my really, really high-end locks because it'll not foul the thing up. Dirt and fouling can get into oil, and it can gum things up if you live in a really harsh environment. If you have, let's say, a lock out in the desert somewhere, Las Vegas, any locals, maybe you want to use graphite powder in a lock like that because it'll go in dry and stay dry. It'll help, you know, it won't get too fouled up and gummed up. That's right, it won't freeze. But just know that WD-40 will attract dirt and fouling. It'll trap it up. The only time, by the way, the full answer I was looking for, the only time you use WD-40 is if the lock is jammed and you don't care about the lock. If, you know, you've gone over to your aunt's house for Christmas and she says, oh, I think that's the tree is out in the shed, the decorations. And you go out there and it's a lock that someone hasn't opened since 1974 and it's rusted to hell. Yeah, you can WD-40 it or you can soak it in kerosene. And maybe it'll open, and then you throw the lock away because that's not good for the future health of the lock. Yes? LPS makes a good product. What is LPS? Okay. So yeah, the gentleman mentions industrial lubricants. High-end industrial lubricants are good. Yeah, Google for LPS or check it out. Molly Coat, those are also good. Let's talk about something that was referenced in the last talk. Firearm locks. How many? We got a lot of libertarian type people here at DEF CON. How many people are gun owners? You don't have to raise your hands if you don't want to. How many people lock your guns in some fashion? Would like to see. Maybe you don't have kids in the house. You don't have kids in your house, then you know you lock your door. But
do super soakers count?
No. We're going to talk about something that's very serious to me right now, just because it's a very important issue that people understand the severe weaknesses of some locks, what they are designed to do, and what they are not designed to do. I would like a volunteer. I know we have people on the Goon Squad. I know, in fact, Virosa, you have time in the service. Stand up for a second, man. I'm going to use Lou. Everyone, this is Virosa. Come on, cheer for the guy. Virosa has served, so he's going to be our authority for today. I'd like, and just as this is for everyone's comfort, he's going to inspect a stage prop that I have that looks like a weapon, but we're going to take him at his authority that it is not a functioning firearm. I want everyone to know this. I want everyone to be very... Yeah, you haven't anything to drink, have you?
Yeah, neither have I. It's all right.
Is everyone comfortable with his authority as opposed to you physically inspecting it yourself? If not, we can actually have someone else who is even more well-known if you'd like Priest or someone to come up. But is everyone okay with Virosa? All right.
Zipper cases over there?
Yeah, it really pisses off the TSA when you put that in your carry-on, by the way.
Yeah, FedEx. FedEx. So, yeah, it should be a file-down firing pin. The barrel's solid.
Solid barrel. Pretty much do the job.
Yeah. Would you care to certify that this is a non-firing weapon?
I didn't see that it's non-firing. I know there's nothing in it.
There's nothing in it. It's completely cored up. This is a solid barrel. I don't know if you can see the lighting.
Cool. Don't worry.
All right. Well, I'm just very serious about
me
this.
Too.
Thank you. Thank you. How many people have ever used a trigger lock that looks like this? I'm very pleased that not too many people have. When I was... God, I want to say I was 12 or 13. I got an air gun for my birthday, and a lock like this is what was installed on it. I'm going to guess I was probably about 14 when I figured out how easy it was to bust this up. And my parents were very proud that I was just so proud of the discovery. I went and showed them right away. They're like, wow, that's so neat. This goes in our closet now. All right. Let's just get that on all the way. This is your typical trigger lock. Most vendors of trigger locks, there are two popular designs of trigger locks. There are bad, and there's colossally bad. Pretty much everyone explores these two designs of locks. This is just in the bad category. Can everyone see? I feel bad. This camera is so awful, but
it's not bad. No, you can see.
All right, we'll do what we can. So this is on. It's installed the way it should go. And I'm going to take this tool, kind of work it around. And I can't really see. I got to move my camera so I can see what I'm doing a little better and get my hands in it. It's upside down, but you guys can live with that. Oh, am I out of frame?
For anyone who thinks he's out of frame, he's shoving a big-ass piece of metal in there.
Yeah, we don't have to applaud on that one. This is a piece of wire, people. This is a piece of fish snake. There's a question? I wouldn't recommend trying it on a loaded weapon, that's for sure. Right, you're never supposed to lock a loaded weapon, people are pointing out to me.
Side note for you, though, on that specific weapon, no, on others, maybe.
Right. Why, you know, in the hell is this possible? Once again, the golden rule, the... I'm sorry. Yeah, keep shouting at me if I'm out of frame, because I want you guys to see everything. The golden rule of, you know, the triumph and peril of our capitalistic system is that the marketplace will regulate itself. One of the marketplace forces is convenience, user's convenience. How does this lock work? Well, this lock just has a pillar down the middle, we can see, and a bar that rotates. Now, this bar, I wonder if I could focus this a little more. Nope, that's worse. Take my word for it. This bar, you can kind of see, has little teeth, notched teeth. Now, these teeth are exposed, and now these teeth are hidden. Those teeth completely engage with teeth that you can barely see down a steel plate, down this, down this barrel here. This steel plate is spring-loaded. Why is that? The man points it out. So that if I want to lock this, where's my camera? And I don't have the key in it, I can just slide it together. Do you know how fucking ridiculously simple it would be to make this steel plate solid? Just make the bastard part of, you wouldn't even need the spring. Just, you know, oh, I need to turn my key to lock it and secure it. I'm out of frame again. I can't fathom why the hell this was designed this way. But it was. This is nothing. This is just a joke. I made this in no time. I made this type of pick when I was 12. They mentioned in the last talk, this information is out there. How many of you have ever read about this? How many of you have ever heard about this? How many of you still use a lock, you know, a gun lock like this? Nobody talks about this because the information just doesn't get out. I hope that if at least one of you goes home and tells somebody, maybe someone will stop using one of these because it's really bad. It's just a really bad design. In the colossal... I'm sorry, we had a hand. All right. Who manufactures the blue lock was a question. They are somebody I've beat up enough on this talk already. They're kind of litigious, and I'm not going to say who makes it. Go to any gun shop in America. They're going to have a whole rack of them. You can see who makes it. Somebody said it. These are the... Just included for your edification, these are the colossally bad category. You know, what the hell is that? I don't even know what this is. But it's not a freaking lock. You can beat this with a paperclip that you have to, you know, pop a CD out of a jam drive. And we saw, this is a slide lock. This is what I was showing you earlier when I was playing with tubular pins. A slide lock is a very nice idea. It's a little more secure in that it locks the weapon completely out of battery, so it can't be engaged, fired, anything. But, I showed you this one. Great concept, but it's a really shitty tubular lock that's employing the mechanism. Put a better lock on the end, and maybe put a Medico on the end of that. You might have a pretty decent lock. Some people just use cable. You can secure firearms with cable. This is a very secure solution. Make sure you use a coated cable so it doesn't rip up the innards of your gun. Also, be aware that the majority of cable you're going to buy like this, this is going to be, you know, an ass-tacular 2000 series lock somehow. They just come really bad. I don't know why. And let's face it, this is not the best solution. It's a very inelegant solution. In general, why do I have this section in the talk now? Everyone, I think people here tend to be a little more clueful than the general public, so most of you should know this already. These are not security devices. These are persuading or dissuading devices. These are designed to prevent very little children from fouling around. You know, oh, what's under daddy's drawer? Here, they'll look at this. These are locks made by children for children, basically. This will not thwart criminal behavior. This will not thwart a curious teenager. Many people, I don't always get agreement with this, but I'm betting this crowd will understand that if you have kids and you have guns, you show them what the hell they are when they're very young. You teach them to respect them, you teach them not to play with them, and then you lock them the hell away from them. But people who just want to, like, no, don't tell them anything, that's not the best solution. What's up? Oh, sorry, question. That's a valid, if you don't, if you have a very easily field strippable weapon, just strip it out, take the firing pin out, put that in a secure place. Well, the man makes a point down here, someone else could acquire another one and put it back in. So, you know, you guys are all smart enough, you can come up with solutions, but just keep this on your radar. One question, then we gotta keep it on. Yes. Those are the under desk type models, and yeah. Yeah, he mentioned the Colt Corporation, and I do love their weapons. They make a very nice a box that it just has, it's almost like a hand pad, and you can feel the buttons, and if you know the order, you program the order in, you can just feel it pop, 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 and then you can, you know, open it up. Any type of safe or any type of box that you put a gun in is much better than just throwing a lock on the gun. Yes. Yeah, there's a lot of better gun locks out there that we can talk about some more. We're good. We still have like 45 minutes because we're rolling into the next half hour, so we're still doing all right. Quick ones on handcuffs. We're, you know, more for the law enforcement crowd, I guess. Guns to handcuffs. Anybody who doesn't know how handcuffs work, this is going to be a real, real brief overview. Inside of a handcuff looks something like this. You have a little ratcheting arm. And this pawl that spins around has teeth on it that the arm engages. It's why you can spin the pawl one way and not the other. When you stick a key in the lock and you turn that key, it just lifts up the arm. That's what the inside of a handcuff looks like. You can see how you can jam almost anything in a handcuff and just try to, you know, flip the thing. And besides, a handcuff key is $1, so it's not that hard to do. You can shim handcuffs. You can do a whole lot with handcuffs that are kind of outside of the scope of this. I don't have any to play with, so if anybody else does, we can play with them later. That could have been interpreted differently, I guess. But could anyone tell me, for a Red Bull, I got to clear some of this out of the way. What is the little pin for on the back of a hand? I saw a hand right here.
It's to lock it in place so that it doesn't get any tighter.
Everything all right? Hang on. Yeah, he got it. The answer is, what is the little pin for? It is a double lock mechanism on a handcuff. The little hole that's on the back of a handcuff that most people don't realize what's there for a reason, if you stick the pin in there on the back of a key, it'll actually put a bar in that prevents the ratchet from moving at all. So it can't get any tighter, it can't get any looser, you can't shim it. To open it, you see it's actually a two-step process to open it. Double lock. In fact, anybody who's ever been in custody, maybe in a street protest or something, and they over-tighten you on purpose, but no, I don't have anything negative to say about that. They're supposed to double lock you all the time because it's actually for your own safety. So the cuffs, if you wriggle or you sit in the back of the car, they don't get tighter on you when you're in them. Most officers don't do that. And it's, you know, I assume you should. I don't know. Does anyone here a cop? Do you do that? Anybody in here who's a law enforcement officer do a double lock? So we spot the Fed. Yeah, they should. Frankly, it's funny, but that's true. Most of my friends who go to protests will request that. They'll say, you know, I request, please make sure you double lock this, sir. And so they don't get, because if you've ever friggin' been cuffed at a protest, you're going to be thrown in a bus somewhere for like 6 hours, and they're going to take 2 more hours to process you. If you're turning blue in the hands, it sucks really bad. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, the gentleman makes the point that cooperating tends to, you'll be treated a lot better when they're locking you up.
You want me to do it?
Oh, we're going to get a demo? All right.
You're my safety. No, I'll get out of
them. Oh, shit.
I can get out of them, and I don't want you to break your wrists.
Once again, Agent X, everybody, and let's thank him for doing this.
This is the shim I need.
Behind your back?
No, I'm not that flexible. I could, but it's...
Walk up yourself?
Where do you go?
Down or up?
It goes... You see?
It's your choice.
Mm-hmm. Everybody see?
Do you want down or up?
Here, lads. Step back a little bit.
Yeah. Want me to double lock him?
Oh, yeah. Full scale. On TV. He's going to protect me.
Yeah, I'm going to protect you. Sure.
I haven't done this in 6 months, but these are the real deal. You know, it's not a magician thing.
Good.
Okay.
Oh, no shit. Look at that.
I haven't done this?
They're slamming them against the table.
Yeah!
So, this is really easy to do. Doesn't require much practice either. The trick is that, like you talked about all the mechanisms inside, you gotta whack this, and it'll just slide. And most of the cops are really good about keeping their kit well oiled. There's even special handcuff oil. So, you have to whack it somewhere. What you'll see magicians do is they'll put like a little metal piece of something in their pants, and they'll whack it against that. But usually you can find something to do it against. I find the hardest part is getting them in front. It'll kill you. That's really dangerous. I've gotten myself by myself in my apartment with these at the end of my feet. It's incredibly painful. You learn real fast.
Why were you wearing a thong?
I wasn't wearing a thong.
You're taking that off. Are you using wet or dry lubricant?
Yeah, okay, so...
He's showing whereabouts he whacked it, according to the request.
Here's the handcuffs. Let's see. And this is the pin they set right there. So maybe you can see it right there. So what I'm doing is unsetting the pin. They have to turn the key both ways, so what you do is just go whack. And it comes right off. Or it comes right down, and then you can shim it. Don't shim it too much, or it's really painful. That's about it.
Yeah, if you do that while in custody, you're fucked, by the way, unless you get away. So don't around.
You know, we're having fun talking about a lot of this, but more than anything, don't be that cutesy guy who's like getting out of the squad car at the station and going, "Ah, look what I did!" Yeah. Mr. Face, meet Mr. Pavement.
It's funny if your friends are cops to fuck with them now. It really is.
Yes, it is. By the way, if you show this to the cops, it freaks them out.
But
the main reason I learned this is not because I ever have trouble with the law. It's because this is really a mental thing. People are like, "I can't get out of handcuffs. It's impossible." I can show you how to do it. It's not that hard. It's kind of a gateless barrier thing. Give it a try.
Thanks, man.
Come to the THF talk at 4 in the tent. We need your money.
And we're going to have a whole – once we wrap this up, we're going to move it into the contest area where the lockpick contest is. We're going to do a whole hands-on session. I'll take as much time as you guys want. I'm going to have a lot of kits you can play with. I ask that you give me like $20, $25, and if you return it, you can have the $25, but I don't want them to walk away. A lot of locks. We're gonna have a good time. So come on in. If we run out of time here for questions, we'll do it in there. Can you carry a lockpick in your check bag? I'll talk about that in the legal section.
You have a legal section? Dude, you really did add a lot of shit.
Yeah. All right, we really got to fly through. We got about a half hour left, and I have like 150 slides, so we're maybe two-thirds of the way through. Really quick, wafer locks. Just going to cover what they are. They're not that sophisticated. Oh, what happened? Everyone has to leave. Is there another cooler talk than me? All right.
Imagine when we do the topless section for all you guys leaving. Not us, but.
All right. Let's just blow through a lot of this now. Wafer locks. If you look at a lock, notice how this lock, there's no upper mechanism up here. This lock just kind of cuts off right here. There's no space where a pin stack could be hiding. There's no room up here for springs and pins. This is an entirely different type of mechanism. It's called a wafer mechanism. They're popular in very compact places. A lot of filing cabinets, a lot of display racks and things use wafer locks. Also automobiles, but they're more sophisticated. Not low. If you look at a wafer from the front and you cut on into it, this is the inside of a wafer lock, essentially, and there's stacks of these wafers in a row. The wafers have to be raised to the right height, and they'll clear. It's not that difficult. There are complex wafers that are double-sided. You can see if you raise them too high, they won't go. Too low, they won't go. And all they'll have to do is just have this rectangle cut in different places on the wafer. So that's how the key cutting works. Wafers are a really interesting sort of mix. They're very unsophisticated, but they don't lend themselves very well to most picking techniques. You can kind of pin by pin pick them, right? But most people just use what's called jigglers. And you just jam it in, bang it all around, and hope for the best. And you get about as good a result as you would get if you just tried to individually pick it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, raking, jiggling, the unsophisticated, just bang attack ends up a lot better. All right, still moving along. Rotating disc locks. Not going to talk too much about these because I can't pick them. I don't even own some. Anything you want to say, or should we just show Barry and you doing a video?
Show a video. I was drunk that day. I'm still here. If you have any questions,
there's a brand called Abus.
No, go ahead.
As a side note. Yeah, so this is the fucking video with me on the other side. You didn't tell me. All right. Anyway, schedule, if you look at your schedule, there were two talks today. First his two-hour intro, then another hour on high security stuff specifically. Due to some scheduling conflicts, the high security stuff was cut down to about a half an hour, and Paul Graham will be coming and giving a speech, and we'll go through all that right before we're done. So just for anyone who has high security questions, hold it off until a little bit later.
This is real quick, though, just showing you that it
and
can be.
And they had on their website this very challenging text saying, nobody can pick our locks, no locksmith, no test institute, no burglars are ever known to pick our locks. And this is actually the type of key.
Okay.
Don't you love it when someone says it's impossible? Isn't that just so great when you prove it wrong?
Yeah, I was a dick there, too.
Well, rush.
Okay. In focus, hope everybody can see. In Germany, from my German lockpick friends, I bought this tool. This is now a little gone. Nobody leave. And it's this tool. And it's called the Fall tool, because Mr. Fall made it. And it's a decoder pick. It picks the lock, but it also reads the lock. So you can make the key. Here you can... Here you can see what pin you are picking, and here you can see the depth of the key. And yeah, with this tool you can open the lock that they claimed on their website could not be picked. It was a real challenge for us to pick it. What they do with this lock is they have discs in the lock. So there's no pins but discs. I'll just show you a few of these discs. I hope I'm in focus. Okay, well, here you can see the discs that are inside. And here's the real notch, and they put some fake notches in as well. So when you start manipulating the lock, you'll experience like it's in the right position, but it's actually not. And it took us quite a while to figure out how to actually pick this lock because of the false notches. And then Paul Krauwel from Montelos, he found out that there's a technique that if you put the pick in the lock. Yep. Okay.
Wow, that's a big thumb.
Thumbs up. Okay, now I'm at the first disc, and I'm trying to feel the cuts. Here's one cut. go to the disk 2.
How many disks are usually in there?
Like 8.
I should have cut this video down. I apologize.
Now, it's possible to get a false cut.
Now, what Paul found out about these false cuts is that they are actually just a little bit tighter. So what you do is you go to one disk, you feel, hey, okay, it's getting, and you feel it's getting again, and you just go for the widest, you just go from one point of the cut to the other, and the widest is the right cut. And that actually was the trick. You have to feel the cuts.
Is that the tension?
Okay, it's
open. In many states,
made an improvement on the LARF, so that this tool actually only works at a certain range of their LARFs. But the people from the German support group, they made a tool that beats that. At this moment, there is negotiation with Airbus what to do. But when Airbus, they just had to take the text down, and now you read, our locks are really secure and very hard to pick. And they don't say it's impossible to pick anymore.
So that's rotating disks. Got to really keep moving here. All right, Master King Theory. Once again, how many people were in the last talk with Mark and Matt? So they mentioned that there was a big fuss about this, about, oh, why are people disclosing these secrets? This has been known to people all over for a long time, but it's just not talked about publicly that often. Master locks, master, not the brand, but, you know, master systems where there's different levels of escalated privilege. That's achieved by an additional wafer or an additional pin in the stack. It's a standard stack, but it just has more pins. So a master pinned lock might look something like this. I say might because there's a couple types of mastering conventions. For a Red Bull, a lighter, and one of those hard drives, do we have any more frack? No, no more frack. Can anyone tell me which of the two master pinning systems, which type this is? No one. Silence. Can you tell me? No?
I don't know what the fuck the question means. I know a lot about this stuff.
Well, this is what's called TPP, or Total Position Progression Master. There's another type called RC, or Rotating Constant, which is a different algorithm. Oh, well. I'll just give some. Whoever can ask me cool questions at the end, I'll give you hard drives for that.
Can I have one?
Yeah, sure. All right. So, you can see how, let's see, you might have a user with the lowest end of the totem pole is just called a change key. That's, you know, just will open this one lock. But you might have a master key if you have a key. Now, this is obviously very exaggerated. If you have a master cut key, these red pins are different. These shear lines are different throughout every lock. But the combination of a red and a green, and you know these aren't the real colors, the combination of the key pin and a master pin together, that is universal throughout all the locks in, let's say, one facility. So a master key would always be able to find this shear line no matter what lock was in what door, whereas a person's change key would only work on their door. However, and many of us who had college dorms with master keyed systems played with this, there is a very, very simple way that if you have any key that works in the system, you can very easily make a master key.
Sometimes.
Would you like to know how? That's pretty much where it starts to go to. This is what happens. Let's say I have this key, and it opens my door to my, let's say, dorm room. I take it out, and I file this down. And I say, well, that screws me, because now I can't get into my room. Because you can see this is binding. Well, I better keep filing it, because I got to get in my room somehow. Keep filing. Keep filing. Wow, the door just opened! Well, I sure as shit know it's not at this shear line, because I've been filing the key down. I just hit a master shear line. You can file this one down, and this one down, and so on and so forth. And you can make an entire master key. There's a whole paper about this, privilege escalation and master keyed systems that Matt wrote. And it's a good read. He took a lot of shit for it, despite the fact that locksmiths have known this for a very long time. And there's rumor that they use this technique to recover lost master keys when people misplace them.
It's not rumors. It's true.
It's true?
Oh, yeah. Sure, I've done it.
Well, it couldn't be higher because then you'd have a bottom pin that's completely out of the shear line, so it has to be lower. I see what you're saying. We're going to touch on that. There is a vendor that has two completely independent shear lines. Oh, yeah. Bump keying and picking is easier on traditional master keyed systems because especially if you bump or you pick, you might pick half of these at a master height, half the lock doesn't care. As long as you got shear lines going on, it's going to open. So, yeah, if you have a really poorly engineered master pinned lock, you did, there it goes. But a very nice mastering type system, a very nice system, is made by Best. And they're called SFICs, Small Format Interchangeable Core. Best is the most popular vendor. Some other vendors make them. These are very easily managed locks. It's very, very popular in large enterprise deployments when you're trying to manage logistics and you're swapping out core. You're trying to manage who's who. The Best locker, the SFIC, this figure eight shape, you can pull this whole core right out of the lock with the use of what's called a control key. This lock core, the pins are all sitting up here. There's a plug in here. The control key engages what's called a control sleeve. And you can see this sleeve has a big piece sticking out the side. If that sleeve is engaged, it's not going to pull out of the lock. But if you stick a control key in, turn it, and actually rotate the plug and the sleeve all at once, you can actually rotate the sleeve out of the way, pull the whole lock out, and then that can be, you can eject the pins, you can manage who's what, you can swap the cores very easily. They're very nicely made. This is also a disaster to try to pick with normal tools. If you just, you can see this is, the brown is sort of the control sleeve. The light color is the plug. These shear lines are completely independent of one another. So you have the top shear, the bottom shear, and if you stick, this is a regular key. This would be a control key. If you stick a regular wrench in there and you tension it, you're going to get binding all across these shear lines. So going in and trying to lift pins up, you're almost always going to not pick them all at the right shear line. You're going to catch some top, some low. You're not going to get it picked. Matt Blaze did the math on this. And, the odds and the likelihood of actually hitting it correctly are not good. There is, however, manufactured by our good friends at Peterson, something called a finger wrench, which can stick in the lock. Let me actually switch up here. There is a tension wrench that has little fingers on it. It's hard to see. Can you see those? What that does is stick into the keyway, stick completely through the bottom of the keyway, because there's holes in the bottom. These holes don't actually serve a purpose in the lock's function. What they do is allow an ejector tool to stick into the lock if you want to pop the pins out and manage your pinning. But if you reach down through these holes, you can actually engage just the control sleeve. By just engaging the control sleeve, you're only going to tension the top shear line. Go in with a regular pick, set the pins. This is not as easy as it sounds. And then turn the control sleeve and eject the entire core. This is one example in what I'm going to kind of wrap up at the end talking about the idea that disclosing these vulnerabilities helps us because, oh, by the way, this is, is anyone going to know this? This will be for a question. I can't hear what you're saying. Mm-hmm. I don't really understand what you mean. Oh, it's not unlocked. You're just pulling the whole thing out. And you could look down and there's like a little, there's little pins that you could flip and go ahead. Pardon me? Yeah, with the core out, you can eject the pins right out of it and get the entire, not only that, if it's a mastered system, you can get the entire master scheme for the entire facility and so forth. Yes. Does anyone know who originally came up with this design for this finger wrench for a hard drive and a Red Bull? No, not Barry. Somebody at Peterson. Peterson makes these. No, not Ken. Good guess, though. Anybody? If you don't know it, a guy named Jerry Finch. Very smart cat. Question? Right. Well, that's closer to the rotating constant system. I can talk about that. I'm going to talk about it a little later. One more question, and then we're going to try to fire through the rest of these. And any more questions, if we run out of time, you're going to have the whole hands-on time to talk to me. Pardon? Yes. Very good point. This is why I'm so pleased with this information coming out. He mentions that there are new sleeve designs. In fact, Matt, when he first talked about this, he took his control sleeve and just cut the holes really huge in the bottom. You can still stick an ejector tool in there. It doesn't hurt. But there's nothing for the finger wrench to grab onto. And I believe Best manufactures sleeves like this now. You mentioned that sometimes the control sleeves are in segments. So, the fact that this was publicly discussed means that it's safer for everyone now, and people are retrofitting their locks with better sleeves. It's a very, very good thing to talk about. All right. Real quick, how many people are enjoying this? How many people want to get more knowledge, more involved?
Are you in the room?
That's what I like to hear. There's plenty of books you can read. There's a lot of good places to go online. Let's shoot through some of these real fast. These slides are all online, by the way, and I'll tell you at the end so we can really flip through this. Two of the best books that I know of. Very intro, very beginners, very what do you want to know immediately first is Steel Bolt Hacking by Douglas Chick. Doug was here last year. I don't know if he's here this year. His books probably are in the vendor area somewhere. The High End is written by the gentleman who spoke before us today. Mark Tobias wrote a book called Lock Safes and Security. That's called by many people the Lockpick Bible. It's just like the history of locks starting in ancient Egypt forward. It's a very, very good tome of knowledge. Online, you can Google for the MIT Guide to Lockpicking. It's hosted at a few places. Some of the videos I'm showing you were cropped from Barry's presentations available here. There's a lot of informative pages. All these links, you don't have to scribble them right now. There's going to be all up at the end. There are sport picking groups. There are hobbyist groups. There's a lot of fun things you can get involved with that way with local people. Every con that you can go to now, DEF CON, back east, the Hope Cons, What the Hack is happening now in Europe, there's sport picking competitions usually. In fact, you know, Kai Goth and the DC-719 crew are running that this year again. They do a great job of it. There's groups. I mentioned Barry's group, Tool. The German group, which I think has 1,000 members. It's really huge. Sportsfreunde der Spieltechnik. Tool USA, we recently founded with Barry's blessing. We're based out of Princeton University. If there's any people near you, you know, meet people here, talk, and go home. Get together and play with stuff. You know, take it apart. It's excellent to do with friends or as an individual activity. I take a train up to Newark to go to school, and I'll just sit there, you know, just fussing with lockpicks on the train, just popping stuff open. It's a great way to pass the time. You get a few strange looks, but you're not doing anything very illegal, sort of. We're going to cover that now in the legal section. You got to hold the question. I'm sorry. We're going to run out of time if we don't. Sorry. Buying picks. Southern guys, excellent, excellent picks for starter kits. They're very simple. The Peterson Manufacturing Company makes very nice high-end equipment. You can get stuff here. I know the guys from IVU are around. Check out their table. Check out some of our stuff in the hands-on area if you want to just pick them up from us. You can make your own. We'll cover all kind of fun stuff, but we're going to have our grinder tools out. We're going to make some picks and make some fun stuff in the hands-on session. Those of you with legal concerns, I am not a lawyer. I am not sleeping with one. This is not legal advice. Take it for what it's worth. Check your local laws. To purchase, ship, and in general, just be involved in the transportation of picks, there is a federal standard. The federal standard is a five-point eligibility. You can be a lock manufacturer. You can be law enforcement. You can be in the auto business. You can be a repo man, or you can be a bona fide locksmith. The lawyers in the room will tell you bona fide meaning in good faith. It doesn't mean a professional locksmith. It doesn't mean a certified locksmith. It just means you have a good faith interest in locksmithing. In many circles, check with a lawyer, in many circles this is extended to hobbyist and academic interests. I gotta have you wait for the question, I'm sorry. If you have a legitimate non-criminal interest in this, you are covered under that part of the law. If you're dealing with a vendor and they say, you know, you have to fill out this form, fill it out under, you know, checkbox number 5, and you should be clear. Possession of lockpicks, however, can be squirrely. Lockpicks per se, right, Mike, are not illegal. Burglary tools are illegal, right?
Depends where, but generally, yes.
Burglary tools, what makes a burglary tool? Intent. Intent is much of the law. Most laws, every state, by the way, the lockpick101.com, those guys, or lockpicking101.org or com, whatever. We'll check it again. They have a whole legal section. You can get into all the information you need. Basically, if you have demonstrable intent that you're trying to commit a crime, you are, you know, you've got a whole other bag of shit you're trying to deal with. If you're just a guy on a subway and, you know, they're doing fascist crap in New York, patting people down now, and they say, what are these lockpicks? Well, you're a guy friggin' riding the subway. You know, there's not really, I'm going to go somewhere and pick a lock. No, there's no intent that you were going to do anything. If you are squatting behind Best Buy at 3 a.m. at the back door and a cop's like, what are you doing? You're like, I'm taking a piss. And they find lockpicks on you, you've got a whole different situation you're in there. So be aware of that. Many states do not have intent laws, or they have kind of more draconian laws. We can cover that later on, or talk to a lawyer. These are states of concern with what are called prima facie evidence laws. It's all kind of relative. Just keep intent in mind. And also, if you do anything else illegal, sometimes possession of a lockpick can escalate that crime. For instance, if you're trespassing, if you have a lot of people here like urban exploring, if you're somewhere you're not supposed to be, you might turn a misdemeanor trespass charge into a criminal trespass charge because you had picks on you. Keep it in mind. Check with a lawyer. There's plenty of lawyers here. Talk to the people who know. Acquiring locks, I'll shoot through this real fast. Basically, the main thing is just don't go crazy buying them all over. Most locks are the same. You're gonna, you know, everyone who gets real, oh, I can pick, it's fun. You go to the hardware store, you drop $60, you got, you know, a ton of the same lock. Look through your basement. Look through old stuff that relatives have left in a box somewhere. Look for old exotic designs. You can get really nice what are called training kits. I have one that you can play with at the hands-on where it's pinned, you know, they're keyed the same, but it's only like a 1-pin stack, then a 2-pin stack, then a 3. So you can actually get the feel for it and get started that way. There's a lot of really good places you can acquire locks. Ask me about later. So how does this all break down into the real world? What does this really bear on in the big picture? They mentioned in the last talk, it's very valid. Criminals don't tend to use lockpicks. I'm not saying no one ever picks a lock with criminal intent, but usually, yeah, you're going to get a boot to the door. Anybody who was watching Sneakers on the DEF CON movie channel last night, you know, they just kick the door down. Brute force is what criminals use. Don't buy the most expensive lock on the shelf and put it, you know, in a, you know, a non-solid core door with like a balsa wood frame, just, you know, with little quarter-inch screws. Situate the lock properly. Consider the overall scope of it. I mentioned, you know, if a guy can sit there next to your server room or your records room picking a lock for an hour, why don't you have a security camera near that door? Why don't you have a security guard who occasionally walks by? Keep the big picture in mind. What make good locks? I always get asked this, so I put this page in just to shoot down a few names. I don't work for any of these guys. They just kind of impress me. Those Medicos with the biaxial pins, I love them to death. The ASA V10, for the slight flaw that it has, it's still magnificent. Those Best FICs, they're very hard to pick. They're very nice to do logistics of large-scale deployment. ABUS, that was what Barry was picking, the rotating disc lock. They make a very, very nice strong lock. American, we're going to talk about a little bit more at my very end slide, but they tend to make good things. And if anybody here is in the military, by the way, anybody who can score me one of these bad boys, the Sergeant and Greenleaf 833, I've heard it told that if you come across one of these somewhere far, far away, there's a lieutenant screaming at a corporal as to why it's not inventoried properly because they're not supposed to get out there. You got one? Oh, nice. That's what I've heard. These are armory locks. These are a Medico biaxial core situated in what is the most beautifully designed and engineered housing I've ever seen in my life. Yes, some bad locks stand out. We've been kind of beaten up on Master for this talk, and I don't like to all the time because they make a high-end model, just no one buys them because they keep friggin' making shitty models that everyone buys because they're cheap. Quickset, everyone who's ever got a door in your house that has a quick set, you'll shit your pants when you pick it in 3 seconds. Keep in mind, you get what you pay for. If there's three different locks on the shelf, one costs nothing, one costs middle, and one costs a lot, chances are the expensive one's going to be better. If you're in the American marketplace, if, you know, it's a free market system, if you're a recognizable name, you can't keep producing garbage year after year, and people aren't going to keep buying your product unless you're Microsoft. You know, just if it's a reputable brand and it's expensive, you're probably halfway there. You picked a quick set with a popsicle stick? It wouldn't surprise me. Keep playing with these locks. Keep experimenting. Security is achieved through openness, not just in the digital world. We should not be so eager to be hushed up about when we discover things in the physical world. Craziness next door. The American 700 is a story I love to tell because it's a complete example of this phenomenon. Anybody live in a big city? Been to a big city? Yeah. All right. So if you're walking around at night, you'll see that like every storefront is closed down with a big honking sucker. Almost always, storefronts and you know, big where brute force, where some guy with a crowbar is going to be the assault, is going to be either an American lock or a clone of an American lock. This is their 700 series lock. It's a very nice padlock. It has a flaw, however, which was discovered. This lock is a removable core. You can see that when the lock is unlocked, you can unscrew from the inside, drop the 8-plate off, eject the core. The core is a nice little self-contained unit. This core interfaces with the double ball control cylinder by means of the core has a raised half-circle piece, and the control cylinder has a raised quarter-circle piece. Can you guys see that, how they just fit together? And when they're together, they turn and they engage. Peterson makes this tool called the American Bypass Tool. This is the bypass tool. And if I stick this all the way down this lock, and I beat this tool to hell, that opens that lock. Why is that? Well, it's because if you're looking at this core, this ejected core, this is the back end of it. The keyway is visible. The keyway is cut all the way through. And the Peterson tool, the bypass tool, just has a little hockey stick kind of end. It slips all the way down through the keyway, and it spins that second cylinder. The cylinder, it just fits right in where it should be, and it just kind of just flicks the cylinder and just turns it. It's a very elegant bypass. It got a lot of attention. But American is a great company. Instead of trying to sue people over this, instead of trying to make a huge fuss, American just came out with something called a security wafer. They're hard to order, but they do have a part number. You can find them by some vendors. You can take your core, eject it out, and put this security wafer in. And it's literally, I love how it's such a like the digital world. It's like they released a patch, you know? So it's like a hot fix. And, you know, you put the lock back together, and you can't stick the American tool down the keyway. Never one to be discouraged, Ken came up with this, which is a wafer breaker kit. You stick these down the keyway, you smash on them, and those wafers are spread out in their history. So we'll see what happens next. I would like to think American's a good company. Chances are they're going to try to come up with something even better, and Ken's going to kind of somewhat come up with something better, and the end result is better security for all of us because we talk about it, the vendors address it. That's not a bad thing. You know, we know about all of this. You guys all, we know about security through obscurity versus real security in the digital world. Think about it the same way in the real world. The physical world is no different. Matt Blaze wrote a couple of great papers about this. I have the links later. Ultimately, I like to kind of wrap it up by saying, don't be super trusting of anything. When I was real young, my dad was in the service, and he, you know, had his issue weapons in the house. When I was growing up, he showed me guns when I was real little, And he said, you know, he's showing me how this is how it's open and closed. And he's showing me how you can look down the barrel and the chamber is empty. And he said, well, why am I showing you this? Because, son, a gun is not safe. A gun is not, you know, okay unless you've seen that it's safe. You're not protected unless you've seen it. What did I just tell you? And I was like, a gun's not safe unless I know it's safe. He goes, no, it's not safe unless you've seen that it's safe. See it for yourself. Take things apart. Play with them. Don't just take people at their word. You know, we joke around, and when AST Cell and other guys are out walking around at night, and we all take pictures, you know, oh, the hacker salute, DEF CON salute. This is more powerful than you know. This is something that you should fly in the face of people who try to stop you from exploring. Nothing can be healthier than a really nice, hearty fuck you to some people who say that learning about things is bad. Can I get everyone to practice this one time all together? Out loud. 1, 2, 3.
Fuck you!
Hey man, those are trade secrets. Those are copyrighted. You can't explore our designs. Just buy them. The Department of Justice is in control. Leave it to your legislators. We will pass laws that take care of you. You don't have to know how things work. Why are you trying to explore things? You're just a criminal. You're not interested in security. Exposing bad security is what protects us all. Thank you very much.